Chapter 10 Chobar Gorge, Nepal. The cell door creaked open. A guard peeked inside, scrutinized Sam for a moment as though he were about to make a dash for freedom, then stood aside. Clothed in a baggy light blue jumpsuit, auburn hair pulled back in a ponytail, Remy stepped into the room. Her face was pink, freshly washed. The guard said in broken English, "Please sit. Wait," then slammed shut the door. Clothed in a similar jumpsuit, Sam stood up from the table, walked over to Remy, and gave her a big hug. He pulled back and looked her up and down and smiled. Ravishing. Simply ravishing. She smiled. Idiot. "How are you feeling?"
"Better."
"Amazing what a few minutes with a washcloth and hot water can do. Not quite a warm shower or a hot bath, mind you, but a close second." Together they sat down at the table. The space in which the Kathmandu police were keeping them wasn't so much a cell as it was a holding room. The cinder block walls and the floor were painted a light gray, and the table and chairs, all bolted to the floor, were made of heavy aluminum. Before them, across the table, was a 4-foot-wide mesh-embedded window through which they could see the squad room. Half a dozen uniformed officers were going about their business, answering phones, writing reports, and chatting. So far, except for a few polite but firm commands in rough English, no one had spoken to them in the 2 hours since they'd been rescued. Riding in the back of the police van in the rapidly fading dusk light, Sam and Remy had watched the passing scenery, looking for the slightest clue as to where they had emerged from the cave system. Their answer had come almost immediately as they crossed over the Chobar Gorge Bridge and turned northeast toward Kathmandu proper. Their underground march to freedom had brought them to the surface a mere 2 miles from where they'd entered. This realization brought first a smile to Sam's and Remy's lips, and then, to the bewilderment of the 2 police officers in the front seat, a gale of laughter that lasted a full minute. "Any clue as to who raised the alarm?" Remy now asked Sam.
"None. As far as I can tell, we're not under arrest."
"We have to assume they're going to question us. What's our story going to be?" Sam thought for a moment.
"As close to the truth as possible. We came out here a little before sunrise for a day hike. We got lost and wandered around until they found us. If they push, just stick with I'm not sure. Unless they found our equipment, they can't prove otherwise."
"Got it. And providing we don't get thrown into a Nepali prison for some obscure crime?"
"We'll need to retrieve the—"
Sam stopped talking, his eyes narrowed. Remy followed his gaze through the window to the far left side of the squad room near the door. Standing at the threshold were Russell and Marjorie King.
"I wish I could say I was surprised," Remy muttered.
"Just as we suspected."
Across the squad room, the sergeant in charge spotted the King twins and hurried over to where they were standing. The trio began talking back and forth. Though neither Sam nor Remy could hear the conversation, the sergeant's mannerisms and posture told the tale. He was subservient, if not a little frightened. Finally, the sergeant nodded and hurried back into the squad room. Russell and Marjorie stepped back into the hallway. A few moments later, Sam and Remy's door opened, and the sergeant and one of his underlings stepped inside. They took the seats opposite the Fargos. The sergeant spoke Nepali for a few seconds, then nodded to his underling, who said in heavily accented but decent English,
"My sergeant has asked that I translate our conversation. Is this acceptable?"
Sam and Remy nodded. The sergeant spoke, and a few seconds later the translation came.
"If you would, please confirm your identities."
Sam replied,
"Have we been arrested?"
"No,"
the officer replied.
"You are being temporarily detained."
"On what grounds?"
"Under Nepali law, we are not required to disclose the answer to that question at the present time. Please confirm your identities."
Sam and Remy did so, and for the next few minutes they were taken through a series of routine questions. Why are you in Nepal? Where are you staying? What prompted your visit? Before getting down to substance.
"Where were you going when you got lost?"
Nowhere in particular, Remy responded. It seemed like a lovely day for a hike.
You parked your car at Chobar Gorge. Why?
We heard it was a beautiful area, said Sam.
What time did you arrive?
Before dawn.
Why so early?
We're restless souls, Sam replied with a smile.
What does that mean?
We like to stay busy, said Remy.
Please tell us where your hike took you.
If we knew that, Sam said, we probably wouldn't have gotten lost.
You had a compass with you. How did you lose your way?
I flunked out of Boy Scouts, said Sam. Remy chimed in. I only sold cookies in the Girl Scouts.
This is not a laughing matter, Mr. and Mrs. Fargo. Do you find this funny?
Sam put on his best chastised expression. Apologies. We're exhausted and a little embarrassed. We're grateful you found us. Who alerted you we might be in trouble? The officer translated the question. His sergeant grunted something, then spoke again.
My sergeant asks that you restrict yourselves to answering his questions. You said you planned to go on a day-long hike. Where were your backpacks?
We didn't expect to be gone that long, Remy said.
We're not the best planners either.
Sam nodded sadly to emphasize his wife's point. The officer asked, You expect us to believe you went on a hike with no equipment whatsoever?
I had my Swiss Army knife, Sam said dryly.
At this translation, the sergeant glanced up and glared at Sam, then Remy, then stood up and stalked from the room.
Please wait here, the officer said, and left the room.
Not surprisingly, the sergeant walked straight through the squad room door to the hallway. Sam and Remy could see only his back. Russell and Marjorie were out of view. Sam stood up, walked to the far right side of the window, and pressed his face against it.
Can you see them? Remy asked.
Yep.
And?
The twins look unhappy. Not a smarmy smile in sight. Russell's gesturing.
Well, this is interesting.
What?
He's mimicking the shape of a box. A box that looks remarkably like the same size as the chest.
That's good. I imagine they've searched the area in which they found us.
Russell wouldn't be asking for what's already been found. Sam stepped back from the window and hurried back to his seat. The sergeant and his officer stepped back into the room and sat down. The questioning resumed, this time with a bit more intensity and in a roundabout fashion designed to trip up Sam and Remy. The gist of the queries remained the same, however. We know you had to have had belongings. Where are they? Sam and Remy took their time and stuck to their story, watching as the sergeant's frustration grew. At last, the sergeant resorted to threats.
We know who you are and what you do for a living. We suspect you have come to Nepal in search of black market antiquities.
On what do you base your suspicions? Sam asked.
Sources.
You've been misinformed, said Remy.
There are several statutes under which you can be charged, all of which carry serious penalties.
Sam leaned forward in his chair and fixed the sergeant's gaze. Charge away. Right after we're booked, we'll want to talk to the legal attaché at the U.S. Embassy. The sergeant held Sam's eyes for a long 10 seconds, then leaned back and sighed. He said something to his underling, then stood up and left the room, banging the open door against the wall as he left. The underling translated,
You are free to go.
10 minutes later, back in their own clothes, Sam and Remy were out the front door of the police station and walking down the steps. Dusk was falling. The sky was clear, and a scattering of diamond-specked stars began to shine. Streetlights illuminated the cobblestone street below.
Sam! Remy!
Expecting this, neither of them were surprised when they turned to see Russell and Marjorie hurrying down the sidewalk toward them.
We just heard, Russell said, trotting up. Are you okay?
Tired. A little embarrassed, but no worse for wear, Sam replied. They'd already decided to stick to their got-lost-on-a-hike story with the King twins. It was a precarious dance. Everyone knew Sam and Remy were lying. What would Russell and Marjorie do about it? Better question, as it now seemed clear that Charlie King had a wholly different agenda than the one he'd shared with Sam and Remy, how would they proceed? What was King after, and what was the true story behind Frank Alton's disappearance? "We'll take you to your car," Marjorie said. "We'll collect it in the morning," replied Remy. "We're going back to the hotel."
"Better we get it now," Russell said. "If you've got gear inside."
Sam couldn't help but smile at this. "We don't. Good night." Sam took Remy's arm, and together they turned and started walking in the opposite direction. Russell called, "We'll call you in the morning."
"Don't call us. We'll call you," Sam replied, without turning.
Houston, Texas.
"Hell yes, I'd say they're off the reservation," Charles King barked, reclining in his plush office chair. Behind him, the cityscape filled his floor-to-ceiling window.
Half a world away, Russell and Marjorie King said nothing over the speakerphone. They knew better than to interrupt their father. When he wanted to know something, he would ask a question.
"Where the hell were they all day?"
"We don't know," Russell replied. "The man we hired to follow them lost them southwest of the—"
"Hired? What do you mean, hired?"
"He's one of our security men at the dig site," Marjorie said.
"He's trustworthy, but incompetent. How about getting somebody with both these glowing attributes? Ever consider that? Why'd you hire someone? What were you two doing?"
"We were at the site," said Russell. "We're getting ready to ship the—"
"Never mind. Doesn't matter. Could the Fargos have been in that cave system?"
"It's possible," replied Marjorie. "But we've been through it. There's nothing to find."
"Yeah, yeah. The question is, if they were, how'd they find out about it? You gotta make sure they're getting only the info we want them to get, understand?"
"Yes, Dad," replied Marjorie and Russell in unison.
"What about their belongings?"
"We went through them," said Russell, "and their car. Our man in the police department questioned them for an hour, but no luck."
"Did he twist their arms, for God's sake?"
"As far as he could." "The Fargos were unfazed," he said.
"What did they say they'd been doing?"
"They claimed they got lost on a hike."
"Bull crap. This is Sam and Remy Fargo we're talking about. I'll tell you what happened. You two screwed up somehow, and the Fargos got suspicious. They're running circles around you two. Put a bunch of people on them. I want to know where they're going and what they're doing. You got that?"
"You can count on us, Dad," said Marjorie.
"That'd be a nice change," grumbled King. "In the meantime, I'm not taking any more chances. I'm sending reinforcements."
King leaned forward and stabbed the speakerphone's disconnect button. Standing on the other side of the desk, her hands folded before her, stood Jilan Su.
"You are hard on them, Charles," she said quietly.
"And you coddle 'em," King shot back.
"Until this latest incident with the Fargos, they've done well for you."
King frowned and gave an annoyed shake of his head.
"I suppose. Still, I want you to get out there. Make sure this thing don't go too far off the rails. Something's got the Fargos' backs up. Take the Gulf Stream and get out there. Fix 'em. That Alton character, too. He's useless now."
"Can you be more specific?"
"Get the Fargos to play their part. Failing that, Nepal's a big place. Plenty of room for people to disappear."